All right. Just a reminder for anybody, if you need to mute your line, you can easily do so by pressing star 6. Welcome, everyone. So happy you all are here. Let's begin, as we usually do, with coming together for a brief period of silence. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives. And we place the Holy Spirit in charge by our request. Taking a nice mindful breath in and out, and coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Okay, so in the Sparkle Edition, we are on page 286. It is the second to last paragraph. It begins with, "Beneath all your grandiosity." So again, Sparkle Edition, page 286. If you have the original edition, we are in chapter 12, paragraph 18. It's page 240 in the hard copy of the book, again, beginning with Beneath All Your Grandiosity. And last but not least, in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, we're on page 243. It's paragraph 8, Beneath All the Grandiosity You Hold So Dear, is how it starts. All right, here we go. Beneath all your grandiosity, which you hold so dear, is your real call for help. For you call for love to your Father as your Father calls you to himself. In that place which you have hidden, you will only to unite with the Father in loving remembrance of him. You will find this place of truth as you see it in your brothers. For though they may deceive themselves, like you, they long for the grandeur that is in them. And perceiving it, you will welcome it, and it will be yours. For grandeur is the right of God's Son, and no illusions can satisfy him or save him from what he is. Only his love is real, and he will be content only with his reality. So a quick reminder, we've read previously about the ego's grandiosity versus the grandeur of God. So when you hear the terms grandeur versus grandiosity, grandiosity is of the ego, grandeur is us, is our true, our inheritance of God. That's our grandeur. So beneath all the ego's grandiosity, which we hold so dear, is our real call for help. And that comes to mind for me how the Course talks about how beneath, you know, any interaction that seemingly is painful, I'll even say it even more simply, it's either love or a call for love. Anything that we experience is either of love or of a call for love. And so in any situation that we might find ourselves that's challenging, beneath it is always a call for help. Does anybody have any questions or comments so far? You know, I feel moved to share a quick story. I figured I would wait till later, but I'm going to share this now because it just came up for me with what we were just reading. How it says, you will find this place of truth as you see it in your brothers, for though they may deceive themselves, like you, they long for the grandeur that is in them. And perceiving it, you will welcome it, and it will be yours. For grandeur is the right of God's Son, and no illusions can satisfy him or save him from what he is. I was in a situation very recently that, I don't even know how to sum it up, it ended up being quite a conflict with another person, a friend of mine, And basically what happened was I said something that was perceived in a certain way, and this person took it as, you know, didn't take it well, and things just sort of blew up, and my ego was screaming, defend yourself, correct this person, this is not what you meant, this is not what you intended to happen, and it's blowing up totally out of proportion. And I had the impulse, well, I should say this, it was all over, we had an exchange over email after a phone call, which is where what I said was taken the wrong way. And I responded to this person's email because I was shocked to get an email out of the blue saying, you know, how upset they were based on, you know, what I had said. And I responded, although calmly and seemingly lovingly from the surface, I was angry. And I still responded from Corinth at that point. The person wrote back to me again, and I then had the impulse to respond again. And I wrote, you know, an email back, and again, recognized that I did not want to engage in the conflict, that anything that I said could easily escalate the situation, and I knew I didn't want to do that. But I still wrote this email before pausing. What came up in me was this gut feeling of I don't want to prove my innocence at this person's guilt. In other words, what I wanted to say was you're totally misperceiving this. I didn't mean it. I'm innocent. You're the one who's misinterpreting things. That's what Corinne, the ego, wanted to convey. But I had this impulse come up in not wanting to establish my innocence at the expense of their being guilty. So before I sent that second email reply, which, again, reading it was very calm and, you know, non-provoking, but before sending that, this time I paused and I was like, okay. I paused and literally felt suspended in the moment of all the judgment that I was carrying, all the impulses to defend, you know, myself or attack back, all that. I said to the Holy Spirit with open arms, I'm willing, wholly willing, to do this differently. And in that moment where everything sort of was suspended was that big miracle. Then suddenly I basically added on a sentence to the beginning of my email and a sentence to the end, which rereading it to me changed the whole tone. It changed from being matter of fact to being much more loving. And I felt very clear, even though my ego was still saying to me, don't send that. It makes them sound like they're off the hook. You know, it makes it sound like everything is okay and you need to tell them what the heck, you know, that how it is that they're misperceiving. So I chose to not listen to that voice, and I sent the email as it was, you know, with that additional sentence at the beginning and at the end after having gotten quiet. And the whole situation shifted. The person wrote me back briefly and is I think still going to respond more at length, but was like, thank you so much, I love you. And like the whole situation just melted away. So that to me came up as we were reading this, because it says, you will find this place of truth as you see it in your brothers, for though they may deceive themselves, they, like you, long for the grandeur that is in them. This person was very fearful because of something that they're going to be going through soon. And so they perceived what I said through that lens of fear. For me to correct them, again, I'm using like quotes around the word correct, and tell them that, you know, they're at fault for misperceiving me is doing the exact same mistake because I'm responding from my own ego. It was in that pause of truly and authentically turning to the Holy Spirit that I became willing to see that truth in my brother, because it was the whole situation was a call for love on my friend's part and on my part when I was responding by wanting to defend myself. So the healing was then for, you know, for both of us. Or I could just say, you know, the whole situation was a lesson for me. So I wanted to just share that to kind of give, you know, an example of about, you know, finding this place of truth and seeing it in our brother. It's not that we see it through our own eyes. It's not that we can choose for love by ourselves. It's always choosing for the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit chooses love for us. We can't do it ourselves, because I was trying to do it myself by writing my own, you know, quote-unquote calm, loving responses, but there was still that undercurrent of anger because I was pissed. So it wasn't until, again, that miracle, that moment of fully suspending all of my judgments that were in my mind, that the shift happened. So that's my example.
That can sometimes, I think it's just marvelous that it occurred the way it did. But sometimes that can take a process with the Holy
Spirit,
you know?
Absolutely, yes.
Very cool, but just remembering to call on the Holy Spirit is always the answer.
Yeah, it really always is. It always is. And let me tell you, the urge to defend myself and to attack back was strong. So it wasn't like just, you know, like, whatever, I'm going to, you know, just turn to the Holy Spirit. It required an active effort on my part to go into that space of pausing and turning to the Holy Spirit.
How long did it take you, Corinne, before you sent the email?
Well, this all happened, let me think. I got the first email at midnight. I don't remember what day it was, maybe midnight on Friday. And I read it and was like, holy cow. And it rattled me. Like, I couldn't fall asleep. Like, I was really upset. I didn't respond back then because it was midnight. I knew it, like, you know, nothing good was going to come out of my mouth. So I went to bed, and it was the next day. So if this was Saturday, if I'm doing this. Actually, no. You know what? I got the email Thursday night, responded on Friday. And all the exchanges were on Friday, and so by Friday evening, everything melted away. So it was within a day. It was a very uncomfortable place to stay in the conflict, so I was partially motivated, because it was so uncomfortable, to get into that authentic place of handing it over to the Holy Spirit. So I didn't. Corinne, as a construct, doesn't like conflict in general. I like to avoid it if at all possible. So was partially motivating.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because, well, I've heard Marianne Williamson mention kind of waiting before responding. And I had this very similar situation happen this week. Funny enough, while I was watching Marianne Williamson's lecture that she live streams, and it was an old roommate, and sent an email, and I think I waited. There was a couple emails, and my anger was building, and then I didn't respond well. I went the other way and did it right away. And then in retrospect, the next day, I surrendered it, and I was trying to surrender it while I was fuming. You know, the ego saying, oh, you got to defend yourself, and this is wrong, and how could he be saying this about, you know, he's completely off base. And I'm sitting there trying to surrender, but the anger just got the best of me. So I responded, and then, you know, the next day I was able to see it with spirit more, and I was able to go back and try to repair as much as I could. But the whole thing was a good lesson in kind of how to respond, and just that I get so sucked into the ego sometimes. It was just crazy. So hearing your story was helpful, really helpful.
Good. Yeah, you know, the ego screams, like,
do something.
Like,
loud.
Defend yourself.
Very loud.
It's that, yeah, really loud. It's like, you know, that the urge to, to respond is super, super strong. And it's not, again, and Paul, I'm so glad that you brought this up because, you know, it's, as we know, Maria Felipe said this in her Miracle Share conference segment, this is not a course in suppressing your feelings. We have to be where we're at. And if we feel we need to go down the path of defending, of responding right away, we go down the path because it's, you know, part of our lesson. And when that moment that we feel ready, we turn to the Holy Spirit. I guess I've just been down this path so many times with another family member who has a very similar pattern to this friend of mine, that I was just like, this person is asking me to practice the course to the 100 and millionth degree. In other words, I'm being called right now to not listen to my screaming ego. And because I've had practice in doing that with, you know, this family member who who I referenced, I think that was there in supporting me this time, you know, with my willingness. So it's not about forcing ourselves to be anything different than we are. It's that moment that we authentically want to choose another way that we go and choose the other way. So,
yeah,
or be willing to choose the other way. So that was helpful, Paul. Thank you.
Well, Corinne, I just want to say thank you so much, because your sharing was very, very beneficial to me.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm going through something similar, but it's been much more drawn out than 24 or 48 hours. And, you know, I can, for me, I'm starting to be able to have my tantrums privately and hand it over to the ego. I do that a lot, hand it over to the ego, hand it over to the Holy Spirit. And, you know, just my mantra has been, change my anger and resentment, or transmute my anger and resentment into peace and joy.
Mm. I love that.
Because I know it's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that ego, you know, you should do, or you should be, or you should react. And I have gone down that road and sent emails back and forth and that kind of thing. And yet, you know, the thought that came to me was, you know, technology today can be a negative in a lot of ways, because it gives you that opportunity to do something very, very quickly.
Right.
And sometimes, for me, the best answer, you know, the Course talks about, I need do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a gift to me, you know, to remind myself, I need do nothing.
Right. Beautiful.
So thank
Beautiful.
You.
That was perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. That was super helpful. I love that. I need do nothing. I need do no thing except to turn to the Holy Spirit. Oh, anybody else want to share before we read some more?
Yeah, Corinne, this is Lissa.
Hi, Lissa.
Hi. I just sort of wanted to get in on this conversation a little bit. I had a similar situation. It was so clearly it was two situations with the exact same person, and it was at work. And the first one started out as one of these ego battles and escalated, and I literally was meeting with her. She's really my supervisor. And I literally turned to the Holy Spirit and said, just, you take the wheel. And I started to laugh, and I always figure when laughter gets involved, we're probably in pretty good shape. I said, you know, really, if we can't work this out, that's ridiculous. I went in. It was very kind. It was great. We worked out that particular issue. I felt so encouraged, so happy, only to a week later be walloped again. And this time I didn't do a very good job with it. And, you know, I responded and defended. It was the same person, and just sort of, you know, things that felt like attacks. And now thinking about it, I don't feel I was in any way unprofessional, but I certainly defended myself. And there's a part of me that just wants to clear that deck, but I'm not sure how to, you know, where to go with it now. You know, it's kind of like an apology is not exactly appropriate. I certainly don't feel like anything I said was unkind, or I thought these comments felt very unkind to me. But, you know, I would much prefer not to go into the new year and the new semester with this sort of conflict hanging over. And her response to me was no response, not to respond. And, okay, you know. But I don't think that was a matter of restraint. But, you know, my ego is just squawking like crazy about this, and I'm not sure where to go with it now, because the time I turned to the Holy Spirit, it was great, but I got re-walloped, and I don't know what to do with that. So
yeah.
I don't get any feedback from anybody.
Can I just make a comment?
Absolutely.
I actually was dealing with, you know, similar feelings this week, And I opened the Course in Miracles, and the lesson 135 spoke to me, if I defend myself, I am attacked.
Hmm.
And for me, you know, it was very, very helpful to read this and to be reminded that, I don't know, the whole thing was just very helpful to me. I can't quote anything in particular except that if I defend myself, I am attacked.
Thank you.
You're literally attacking yourself when you defend yourself.
Yeah.
It's so funny, Carol, that you brought up that lesson, because that was that lesson title just sort of flurried through my head when you were speaking, Lissa. So I thank you, Carol, for sharing that. I think that would be a great, great lesson to turn to.
And my subsequent question is not, you know, and I agree with that, but what now? Do I re-enter the thing and say, oh, you know, forget what I said? Or, you know, I'm kind of at that place. I'd rather not have this. I do feel sort of like a self-attack going on, but operationally not really clear what now. I've already done it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
so it sounds like, are you saying perhaps that there's some guilt there?
No, I just don't want that to be carrying on. No, my ego's still winning the battle. but I don't want that to be out in the world. The hard part is I feel completely justified.
Uh-huh.
You know, as we do
uh-huh.
sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You know, just 100% telling you.
Alyssa, that's where that, for me, that anger and resentment comes in, and, you know, I ask to have it transmuted into peace and joy for myself. You know, it's very
right, right, and I'm completely fine with that. Do I do anything for or with the other party, or is this
that's
just an internal process? Because
that's a great question. I'm sorry, did you finish?
No, that's kind of what I, like, operationally, what do we do in that way is what I'm asking.
I think Carol nailed it before with I need do nothing, because
yeah,
it's really,
you know,
there's nothing going on out there anyway.
The only way that you can get an answer to that question is by getting, again, so quiet, and even if it's just for a moment, and asking the Holy Spirit that question.
Okay.
Because the Holy Spirit is the only one that knows, you know, number one, we need the Holy Spirit for the miracles. And it sounds like that's what you're asking for. You're asking for that shift. You know, you're asking for that shift in perception. And so I would suggest taking that desire, you know, to have the air cleared, you know, taking that to the Holy Spirit, saying to the Holy Spirit, you're willing to look at whatever you need to look at. Bringing that question to the Holy Spirit and
hey, that's great. Thank you, everybody, so much. That
of
was
course,
helpful.
Of course.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up.
I'll just share for Lisa too, because I had a similar situation this week that came up for me, and when I would get quiet enough so that I wasn't totally immersed in the loud voice of the task, the ego, I kept getting reflected back to me, like, where am I focusing my attention? Am I focusing my attention on what I think is wrong with the situation? Or am I really giving it to spirit and expecting the best possible outcome? So, like, am I focusing on what I don't want, or am I focusing on the truth of the situation? And if I was really, really honest, I was focusing on my fear. I was focusing on what I didn't want. And so that's kind of what I got out of the situation. And once I was able to turn the switch off, the fear switch off, and become more loving towards myself and my own thoughts about the situation, that's when everything shifted.
Mm.
That was beautiful, Deidre. Thank you.
Very,
that's
very
helpful.
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. That was great, too. Thanks.
Right. Where you, your attention really amplifies whatever you're focusing on, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things you mentioned, Deidre, for me, is my worthiness comes up so often, and do I feel like I'm worthy of feeling that peace and joy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often? You know, definitely not 24/7, but, you know, 22/6 would be good. It feels like a real challenge to feel like I could bathe myself in what you just said. That was just so beautiful.
Awesome. You know, I think, again, it always comes back down to those two voices. So the voice for the ego is certainly going to tell you you're not worthy of anything good. So it's always a matter of, wait a minute, would God be saying that about me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what voice am I listening to?
Mm-hmm.
And to add to that, during John Mark Stroud's conference presentation in the Miracle Share Conference, he said something that I just thought was so helpful. In that, along with the line of, you know, there's always two voices and two choices, sometimes people will think, oh, I can't hear the Holy Spirit. We don't have listening problems. We listen to the ego all the time. We have a choosing problem. That's our problem.
Yeah.
Choosing, because we still think that the ego has something that we want. We still think that the ego has something to offer. So it's not that we ever have a listening problem. We listen quite well. We just don't choose.
That's
Know, we choose for the ego. We don't choose for the Holy Spirit. So I just felt moved to share that.
Or in my case, we have made the ego such a problem for yourself that you want rid of it. And you focus on it, like Deidre said, you know, where is my attention here? On my fear, on my whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm listening to. Get rid of it. And like
this
course says, what you've made real, how can you overlook it once you've made it real? So I have to, and I was going into choir practice the other day, and I was, and my anxiety for some reason was kicked up, and I said, all right, Jesus, you got to give me something here. I don't want to walk in there. And all of a sudden the thought said, okay, Susan, who made this? Did you make it? If you made it, it's not real. You can let it go.
And I thought, that's wonderful.
You're right. I can't. It's just a thought in my head that I've amplified.
Right.
And it just left me.
Yeah.
It was it was beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean, that answer came to me in a split second.
Wow. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Let's read the next paragraph. Save him from his illusions that you may accept the magnitude of your Father in peace and joy. But exempt no one from your love, or you will be hiding a dark place in your mind where the Holy Spirit is not welcome. And you will exempt yourself from his healing power, for by not offering total love, you will not be healed completely. Healing must be as complete as fear, for love cannot enter where there is one spot of fear to mar its welcome. Wow. That's really powerful. Love cannot enter where there is one spot of fear to mar its welcome. So those tiny little hidden attack thoughts, those little fleeting, fears, or as the in the Sparkle edition, it's called scraps of meanness. It refers to scraps of fear in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. But I think both, you know, unedited and edited phrases are helpful. Every little scrap of meanness or scrap of fear that we you know notice sort of flies through our mind, all those can be taken to the Holy Spirit. Anything that we are willing to allow to come up to awareness is an opportunity for healing. because by not, I just love how this paragraph says, exempt no one from your love or you will be hiding a dark place in your mind where the Holy Spirit is not welcome. So that challenging person, that challenging, you know, that whoever it may be that challenges us the most, we don't have to send them love of our small self. We can simply give them to the Holy Spirit or give our perception of them, our willingness to see them differently to the Holy Spirit. That's our tiny little part to exempt no one from our love.
Now, if I can ask a quick question, and
absolutely.
I don't want to derail the direction, because the direction is powerful. there's one word that has been in the reading, and really all of you have used the word, and the word is love. And I don't want to appear too basic and unsmart or not knowledgeable, but can you, Corinne, can you just maybe a sentence or two? What is love? I mean, it seems silly to ask the question, but I want to.
Brian, that's not a silly question at all. I'm so glad that you asked it, and yeah, I'm glad that you're listening to your guidance in asking the question. Love, as the Course refers to it, is the love of God. So it's love with a capital L. It is the type of love that transcends anything, you know, that we might think of love as here. It's greater than that. You know, the Course says the only part of the world that has reality is whatever part of it we look upon with love. But it's greater than, like, the special romantic love.
Yeah,
much greater than that. So I would sum it up as love equals God. That's,
yeah,
I think, the clearest
gotcha.
Way that I can say it. Does anybody else have anything to add?
I think the workbook lesson, there is no love but God's. I think it is lesson 128, if I'm not mistaken, defines it, just totally defines it. Mm. I can't wait till we get into
the workbook.
Lessons. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me,
does that help, Brian?
Yeah, definitely, because it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we live in a sea of love.
Yeah.
And I don't know, when I experience it, it's like a blanket that envelops me and just lifts me out of myself. It's hard to describe. It's not a thought like, oh, you know, it's like not a fondness or anything like that. I don't want to call it energy because that diminishes it. It's the force of life. It's life itself.
Isn't it well-being in a sense? That feeling of well-being.
It's the ultimate.
Everything is just
well-being
fine.
That we are perfectly safe. Totally,
yeah.
Healed, completely cared for. All of our needs are, you know, we have no needs, therefore there are no needs to be met. It's that, you know, to the nth degree.
What's that workbook lesson that says something about imagine yourself with no anxieties, no cares, no worries, completely safe, completely loved, et cetera, et cetera. And now imagine that multiplied millions of times. You have then just begun to experience the love of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, 127, I think, is the there is no love but God's.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
I found, I think, was that Sue, were you just sharing the no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet? That, I just searched for it really quick and I found it. It is in Chapter 15 in the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition, Part 1, under the two uses of time. It says, can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time? Yet that is what time is for, to learn just that and nothing more. And then it goes on from there. And it might also reference that in one of the lessons as well. But that's just...
Well, I just remember it said, that multiplied, and
yeah.
you have just begun to experience
yes.
the peace
yes.
that is available to you.
Beautiful.
That just blows me away.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Thanks.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So let's read the next paragraph. You who prefer specialness to sanity, and I'm going to actually pause for a moment because just to mention in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it says it was edited to say, you who prefer separation to sanity. So you who prefer specialness to sanity or separation to sanity could not obtain it in your right minds. You were at peace until you asked for special favor, and God did not give it, for the request was alien to him. And you could not ask this of a father who truly loved his son. Therefore, you made of him an unloving father, demanding of him what only such a father could give. And the peace of God's son was shattered, for he no longer understood his father. He feared what he had made, but still more did he fear his real father, having attacked his own glorious equality with him. So this, again, is speaking to this tiny mad idea that we forgot, that we chose to forget to laugh at when we asked God for specialness, and God doesn't know such a thing, and so that's when we turned our back, so to speak, on God and decided to dream up this crazy world of specialness to experience ourselves in a state that God doesn't know, in this state of separation or specialness, however you want to say it. So that's what this paragraph is referring to me. Let's read the next paragraph, too. In peace, he needed nothing and asked for nothing. In war, he demanded everything and found nothing. For how could the gentleness of love respond to his demands except by departing in peace and returning to the Father? If the Son did not wish to remain in peace, he could not remain at all. For a darkened mind cannot live in the light, and it must seek a place of darkness where it can believe it is where it is not. God did not allow this to happen, yet you demanded that it happen and therefore believed that it was so. And so we sleep. So this is, again, speaking to this sort of, how do you say it? Just like this sort of how we got to where we are. It says a darkened mind cannot live in the light and must seek a place of darkness where it can believe it is where it is not. So this is how, you know, the Course teaches that we chose to, part of our mind decided to go into a sleepy state and dream this dream of specialness. It didn't happen. It's impossible for us to leave God in any way, shape, or form, but we demanded that it happen, and therefore we believed in our dream. We believed that it was so. We believed that, you know, it was all possible. And so this dream feels really real because we are using the power of God that we are to make ourselves forget that that's what we are.
And something just occurred to me, Corinne, and everybody, I don't know if it's, but it took like the one illusion. And I know for myself, with the anxiety, if something bothers me, then, that will bother me. It kind of piggybacks onto, if I'm anxious in one situation, then I anticipate that I'm going to be anxious in the next situation, because, you know, so we did that with our minds. We made up these beliefs, and that's all they are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what is driving us insane, are these beliefs that aren't true. Like,
yeah.
like going into choir practice, you said, you made it. It's not true. Let it go.
Right. Right.
And I walked out of the car, and I was totally free.
Right.
So as we let go of these crazy things that we hold on to, and the one that Nook Sanchez is doing, the final one with death, is a belief.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right. And, Sue, I'm so glad that you said what you did, because
how you started out with saying, you know, like with anxiety, if you're anxious in one situation, you therefore start anticipating, like, you know, similar situations and being anxious
mm-hmm.
about those. That's how the ego ensures that, you know, it tells us that the past is real and that the future is going to be like the past. And so it pays no attention whatsoever to the present, because as we know, the present is the only, it says in this next section that we'll be reading, it's talking all about this, how, you know, the present is the closest that we have right now to eternity. And to the ego, the present is just like a, you know, a nice little blip to join the past and the future. And so I'm just so glad that you shared that example, because that's the perfect example of how the ego will try to say and you know, have us listen that the future is going to be like the past, and therefore it keeps the past, seemingly the seeming past, happening in the present and the future. And so we feel stuck.
And all it is a way, supposedly we think, to protect ourselves.
Right, right.
It's all defenses. Oh,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I won't be, you know, I won't be safe there.
Right, right.
Won't like me. It's all these barriers that we put around ourselves to protect this little thing that we think we are.
Right, right. Ah, that's
it's a bad habit.
It is a bad habit, and I'm just chuckling, too, because I so need to be hearing this, and it's just so funny, because I'm going in a couple of weeks, actually less than 2 weeks, I'm going on a 5-day silent meditation retreat up in Barre, Massachusetts, and talk about, you know, anticipating and, you know, the ego wanting to plan for its, you know, safety and protect this body, this thing that I think that I am, like, oh, what if you get stuck and there's snow? You should bring a shovel. You should bring, like, I'm going to be in a retreat center. Like, all my needs are going to be met, you know? So it's just so funny. I'm really glad that we're talking at this and that it's coming out, because I'm going to take that to the Holy Spirit.
I love, like, you know, how interconnected everything is, because just as Sue was talking and you were talking earlier, Corinne, I was reminded of, I was in meditation this week when all of the kind of crazy crap was going on. And then I all of a sudden Googled something on one of the ACIM websites, and this quote came up that said, "The holy instant is the Holy Spirit's most useful device for teaching you love's meaning, for its purpose is to suspend judgment entirely. Judgment always rests in the past, for past experience is the basis on which you judge." And I felt like that was like the answer right then. And we've been talking about it this whole time. It's like we're always, whenever we're anticipating, it's because we're basing it on past experience, past judgment.
Right.
What could go wrong? You know, we're anticipating the past.
Right. Right.
Rather than, you know, trusting the truth. So
oh,
I just thought I would share that, because it
so
made
funny.
Me goosebumps.
Oh, thank you for sharing, Deidre. I love how, you know, we often will find just coming together in these calls, just like, you know, how similar our lessons are.
Don't you kind of find, though, over time working with the Course, that there's a certain trust that starts to develop?
Absolutely.
You know, even though I know I have a retreat I'm going to in January, and yeah, that idea, oh it might snow, oh it's up and, you know, mm-hmm. but I think the feeling that I just know that trusting is essential to God's plan, which is my happiness, and I don't particularly think I'd be too happy stuck in the snow. So, you know, the more I can trust that idea that all is well, this is going to work out,
yeah.
you know, and go with that.
Sorry, Paula.
No, go ahead.
I thought you were done. I'm sorry. I was
no,
just
going
to say that just rung a bell for me, because I've been reading, I feel like right now the Manual for Teachers, the part about trust, I think it's number 1, right? or
yeah,
it's one of the first ones, but I've been reading that and I've been finding it helpful because it pretty much is describing my life right now. And when I read it, it just reminds me of, okay, this is what this is all about. And
yeah,
just kind of normalizes everything for me.
That's awesome. You know, listening to this, this is just so perfect. Just, again, oh, such a powerful reminder about trust. I have been in a situation twice where my car has broken down. And this is before I had a cell phone, because I didn't carry a cell phone for years, even though, you know, it was like the norm to have one. That's a whole other story as to why. But I suffice it to say, one time when my car broke down, I was en route to Florida with some girlfriends in my car. And again, just being in that place of trust, we broke down, and I just, again, had no fear and just trusted. We broke down right next to the exit that had the only open service station. It was a Saturday in like a radius of like 60 miles around. It was the only one that was open. Another time my car broke down, I immediately, well, it didn't break down. It started making this horrible noise and the engine light was flashing and it was smoking, and I pulled over, and out of nowhere, I pulled into, Paula, you would know, the Alaire Airport, pull into this little parking lot, and I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm frozen. I was feeling fear. Out of the blue, this man in a truck just rolls right up. He's like, do you need help? And my alarm, you know, because I was like, oh, stranger, man, you know, be careful, don't get out of your car. He's like, my car was still working. He's like, follow me into town, and I'll just, you know, accompany you to your mechanic. My mechanic was just a few miles away. On the back of his truck, he had this engraved plaque that said L-O-V-E. And I thought, thank you, Holy Spirit. So, like, living in that space of trust, if we are in need, our needs will be provided. So I just had to share those two stories.
Wow. Thank you.
All of you for just however our conversation got here. This is exactly what I needed to hear in preparation, or I should say just in trust for my upcoming trip.
When I went to a retreat in May, Lisa Natoli said something too that has always stuck with me. And it was something to the effect of, if you're feeling anxiety of any form, it means that you've picked up your own plan and you've temporarily dropped the Holy Spirit. And that was just like, wow. Like that was like, you can't get much, you know, more clear than that. And it's always really stuck with me, because the moment you pick up your own plan is when you start, you know, doing the whole spiral.
Oh, that's so helpful.
Yeah.
Definitely needed to hear that.
Me too, yep.
I'm saying it for myself, too.
We teach what we need to learn, right? I love how Earl Purdy said that. He said, I love teaching what I need to learn. And
exactly.
It's true for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, so helpful. All right, let's read the last paragraph. To single out is to make alone, and thus make lonely. God did not do this to you. Could he set you apart, knowing that your peace lies in his oneness? He denied only your request for pain, for suffering is not of his creation. Having given you creation, he could not take it from you. He could but answer your insane request with a sane answer, which would abide with you in your insanity. In other words, the Holy Spirit. For his answer is the reference point beyond illusions, from which you can look back on them and see them as insane.
Mm-hmm.
But seek this place and you will find it, for love is in you and will lead you there. I love how it says, for his answer, that his answer is the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
For his answer is the reference point beyond illusions, from which you can look back on them and see them as insane. But seek this place and you will find it, for love is in you and will lead you there.
That is really interesting.
Yeah.
For his answer is a reference point beyond illusion from which you can look back on then. You know, yesterday, Carol called me, Carol on this call called me up in the morning and said, we're coming down to your area tomorrow. Do you need any help with anything? And when she asked me that question, I thought, I did have one thing I could use help with, but I said, oh, thank you so much, and I'll call you back and let you know if anything comes up. And darn if I didn't go to buy a Christmas present for my daughter. And it's a console for a TV, and it turned out to be this huge piece of furniture. It's boxed. It has to be put together. And, you know, they put it in my car, and there's no way I could get that thing out of my car. No way whatsoever. I mean, it weighed so much. And then I realized, oh, my God, Carol and Pat are going to come down tomorrow. Do you know, he picked that thing out of my car like it weighed next to nothing, put it in my closet. I mean, it was effortless accomplishment. It was, you know, looking back on this, his answer is a reference point beyond your illusion from which you can look back on them and see them as insane. So any concern I really had would have been insane. Mm-hmm. This was all just kind of just played out divinely. But again, I think on some level, because of working with this material, there is a trust, you know, that manifests.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
It really makes sense in my mind.
Well, it's Jesus says in there, he says, you know, as you learn to turn to me instead of your ego, your trust will be increased. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have never, my whole life, I've never turned to the Holy Spirit or Jesus. I've turned to my intellect.
Yeah, of course.
What did I do before? What should I do now? What seems to be the best course of action? And, you know, never did I think, okay, I'm going to still my mind here and go inward and ask you. I mean, that just wouldn't even...
But the, you know, this, is,
to me to do
this is really the beauty of working with this material, because it becomes sort of effortless. You know, because on some level your trust just increases and increases and increases, and yet it's not even a conscious awareness so much.
Right.
Well, no, and when you come to realize that God Spirit is really living your life.
Yeah, breathing you.
Yeah, totally.
So the fact that you are trying to make decisions on your own, you're fighting reality. You're fighting
right.
your best interests. You're fighting everything, because what is effortlessly the best for you is naturally coming to you if you would just allow it and get out of your own way. I'm preaching to myself here, but what I need to do.
We need to do nothing. We need to do nothing. Oh, wow. Awesome, everybody. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. That was so, so helpful. We'll wrap it up for tonight. I hope you all have a miracle-filled week. I love you all, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good
Bye,
week.
Everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.